Welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. We're dedicated to sharing Great Loop information and inspiration with those actively cruising, planning for, or dreaming about a Great Loop adventure. This is Kim Russo. I'm the director of AGLCA. Today, my guest is Eddie Johnson of Eddie's Weather Wag. Eddie volunteers to do this for us, and the Weather Wag started last week, and of course, that's pertaining to information for crossing the Gulf. So Eddie agreed to join me today to explain a little bit about the Weather Wag and also provide some of the details from his 90-minute presentation last week at the Fall Rendezvous on Crossing the Gulf. Before I bring in Eddie, I do want to take a moment, as I always do, to recognize and thank our Admiral-level sponsors who support AGLCA at the highest level. They are Curtis Stokes & Associates, Dog River Marina, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, Skipper Bob Publications, United Yacht Sales of the Carolinas, and Waterway Guide Media. We encourage all of the loopers and other listeners out there to support these businesses that support the Great Loop. Eddie, thank you for joining me today. I appreciate you giving us even more of your time after the rendezvous last week.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, Kim.
You did start the Weather Wag last week, so let's start if you can kind of fill people in on what the Weather Wag is, who it's geared towards, and how it came to be.
Well, the Weather Wag, really we're trying to reach what we consider a majority of our members who are going to be crossing the Gulf of Mexico for the first time. Much like we have had in the past, Linda and I on Spiritus, we meet that with a little bit of intrepidation. So knowing that most people have some concerns about crossing the Gulf, whether they're going to do it during the daylight or at night, Tom Conrad several years ago started this forum to get the information out to our loopers, helping them decide what would be a good time to cross the Gulf. Now, everyone has different size boats, different crew capabilities, obviously different boat capabilities. And what we're gearing our decision on basically is the looper who has not ever gone across the Gulf, and this is probably the only time they're going to go across. We're gearing it towards the person who has very little, if any, true open water experience. They probably don't really know what their limits are as a crew or the boat's capabilities. And as most people who have crossed the Gulf already will attest to, your boat's capabilities probably far exceed your crew's capabilities. Almost all of us are apprehensive about going across the Gulf, whether it is daylight or overnight crossing. And of course, everyone is wishing for a flat, smooth, calm wind to go across the Gulf. And if you're going at night, of course, everyone wants a full moon. Obviously, that's not going to happen for most of us as far as having that full moon. But that's what we all kind of wish for. So the Weather Wag is geared towards helping people decide when it would be a safe and comfortable time to cross the Gulf. Now, two criteria
I was going to say that two
of the major things that I'm looking for when I do an analysis of the various weather sites that I look at, Kim, are winds and sea conditions. During the period that we want to go across the Gulf, for the entire period, and that's very important for folks to remember when they start analyzing these various weather sites themselves. You want it to obviously exist for the entire period that you're going across the Gulf. I'm looking at winds that are 10 knots or less and seas that are 2 feet or less. That will give just about anybody in any boat that loopers go across the Gulf in a comfortable crossing and a safe crossing, as we like to say, a night without drama.
Right. And kind of disclaimer time, each captain really needs to make their own decision on go or no go. So you're basically, Eddie, providing your opinion based on your analysis and what you know your boat and your crew can handle. Is that an accurate statement?
That is an accurate statement. That's what the kind of conditions that we have resolved to stick with. We have been across on a literally dark and stormy night, and we never want to do that again. And Tom Conrad, same thing with him. He's been down this road, and our goal is to help people make a decision that they have to make as to whether to follow our suggestion or to follow the suggestion of any data that that they may be gleaning on their own. This is really the captain's decision, but we're just we're smart enough to realize that not everyone is up to speed on interpreting the vast amount of weather data that is out there. Ask 10 captains of our group what weather site they like to use to for their weather interpretations, and you'll probably get 10 different websites. So it all comes down to, you know, who do you want to believe, what do you want to believe, and what are the criteria that both the website is using, and what criteria are you as a captain on your boat with your crew, what are you using?
Right. So it's not going to be unusual for our members to hear different pieces of advice or different opinions on what is a suitable weather window. So what Eddie is trying to do is kind of cut through that noise a little bit and break it down into a little bit of a simpler analysis by Eddie, you getting up extremely early for several months in a row to kind of analyze different sites and break it down into a simpler term for loopers who don't have as much experience. So thank you for doing that. For any of you who don't know, Eddie does that on a completely volunteer basis. And I know we at the Homeport crew appreciate it, and I know all of those crossing the Gulf also appreciate that. So thank you for that, Eddie. Sorry, we've got a little bit of a delay, I think, on the phone. Let's go ahead and talk about the crossing itself, because for many loopers at kind of trawler speed, it's probably an overnight crossing. But for some in go-fast boats, it may be a daylight-only crossing. So talk about, you know, the goal of arrival, when to arrive, and how you kind of can determine whether you're an overnight crosser or a daylight-only crosser.
Sure. The way to determine basically whether you're going to do an overnight crossing or a daylight-only crossing, it's just a process of elimination. If you normally cruise at 7 or 8 miles an hour, you're probably going to want to do an overnight crossing. If you cannot sustain a 15-mile-an-hour speed for 10 or 11 hours, you probably will not be able to do a daylight-only crossing during the time of year that that most of us are doing at this November, December, January, February time frame, because the you'll run out of daylight basically. So that's the key. Just figure out if you don't think your boat can sustain 15 miles an hour or greater for a 10 or 11 hour period, well, then you probably are going to want to go ahead and do an overnight crossing. If you do an overnight crossing, most of us at 8 miles an hour, the travel at 8 miles an hour, we're going to leave Carabel or Apalachicola, basically East Pass, which everyone has to go through whether they stage out of Apalachicola or Carabel. You want to leave East Pass somewhere between 3 in the afternoon and 6 in the evening. Now, there's two reasons for that, Kim. First of all, if you leave at somewhere between 3 and 6 in the evening and get out into the Gulf, that gets you out there when you still have some daylight. So that gets you out into the open waters, putting the land behind you, kind of getting used to your surroundings out there in open water, not being able to see land to your left or to your right. before darkness sets on you. So that's one reason for getting out there and that, or departing at that time. The other thing is, if you use a 7 or 8 mile an hour criteria to cross the Gulf, you want to arrive at the other end, and for what for the purpose of most of our loopers, we try to tell them to go to the north end of Anklo Key, which is near Tarpon Springs. You want to arrive there at marker R4 no earlier than 10 o'clock in the morning. So that's why we have that 3 to 6 o'clock in the afternoon departure time, is so that we can get you out in the Gulf in daylight hours and arrive north of Anklo Key in daylight hours as well. Now, the reason...
What's the reason for arriving at 10? I think you're answering the same question I was just asking.
Yeah.
The reason for trying to arrive no earlier than 10 a.m.?
Well, the reason we don't want to arrive at that marker R4 before 10 o'clock in the morning is because of the crab pots that are out there. We want to be able to see crab pots. Those are really the only things that create any danger for us, if you will, is those crab pots. So traveling at 8 miles an hour, if you arrive, let's say you determine that you want to actually be at R4, the marker at the north end of Anklo Key at 10 o'clock, at 8 miles an hour, that gives you about 24, 25 miles of daylight to travel to marker R4. The sunrise normally, depending on which month you go down there, will normally start rising about 7 o'clock in the morning. So by being 25 miles or so from R4, that gives you enough daylight to where you can start picking up those crab pots or seeing those crab pots and obviously dodging them. That's very, very important that folks realize that they probably don't want to get to that particular marker before 10 o'clock. Also, that gives the sun a little bit of time to rise, Kim. That time of year between November and February, the sun actually is going to be in our face, even though the course is about 136 degrees. The sun will just about be in our face when we're traveling on that heading. So by getting there at 10 o'clock, it allows the sun to rise a little bit higher and consequently allows us to be able to spot those crab pots.
Okay, let's focus now on, we've talked about those who have the ability to do a daylight-only crossing. For those that don't, I think that there's some confusion about the weather windows for a straight-across overnight crossing versus taking the Big Bend route, which is going to be 3 or 4 days of hops along the Gulf. What are some of the factors people should consider when deciding which of those routes to take?
Well, probably the first thing is that the shortest distance between two places is a straight line. So going across the Gulf of Mexico is going to expose you to the open waters the least amount of time and for the least amount of miles. It's 170 miles from Caravelle to Tarpon Springs. That's from dock to dock. Now, some people think, well, you know, I don't want to cross in the dark. I don't want to be out there in the dark. And that's fine. If you don't want to be out in the dark, you have two choices. A, get a faster boat, which is not practical for most of us. Or B, the Big Bend route. The Big Bend route is longer. The typical route that people will take, or stops that people will make on the Big Bend route, take them from Caravelle over to Steinhatchee, from Steinhatchee usually down to Cedar Key, and from Cedar Key you can make it down to Tarpon Springs. So we're talking basically about a 3-day trip. Now,
and
you
that,
just have to...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. What people have to realize is that, you are traveling, If you do the Big Bend route, you are actually traveling in the Gulf. You're no longer in protected waters like you were along the ICW when you left Mobile, Alabama, and go over to Apalachicola or Carrabelle. There's no protection. You are actually traveling in the Gulf. Consequently, also, the second day on the Gulf, if you go to the next place, which is normally Cedar Key, when you get there, you're going to have to anchor. And when you anchor there, you're also going to be in the Gulf of Mexico. People get fooled sometimes by these keys that are depicted on their charts. Those keys that are there are very, very low. They do not provide any protection whatsoever from any weather that might be coming in from the Gulf from the west. So when you're anchor there, you really, it's just like, even though you're in shallow water, maybe, 8 to 10 feet, you're literally anchoring still in the Gulf. So that's why we say that when you decide that you want to do the Big Bend route, you must have 3 days of good weather in which to do the Big Bend route, because you will be spending, once you leave Steenhatchee, you will be continuous days in the Gulf. Very important that people realize that. So consequently, it takes you longer, not just because of the distance to go on the Big Bend versus straight across the Gulf at night, but it takes you longer because of those weather requirements.
So I think what people perhaps don't realize until they start asking the questions is that you are traveling several miles offshore, even on the Big Bend route. Is that correct?
That is correct, Kim. You don't scoot along the shoreline like you may think you will. The Gulf of Mexico is very, very shallow, and in order to go down the coast of the Big Bend, you actually have to get offshore, just depending on where you are, 10, 15, 20 miles. So that puts you out in the Gulf while you're traveling as well. But if you have some apprehension about traveling at night, then this, of course, is a viable alternative.
Okay. What other facts should we consider when planning for the Gulf crossing?
Well, other than the weather, I think most of us probably would be most comfortable, especially traveling at night, traveling with a buddy boat. We talk about that at the rendezvous also. It's always nice to have company. You may want to talk about some things with that buddy boat before you actually go out there and do it. Define each other's responsibilities, define what kind of speeds you're going to go at, figure out who's going to lead and who's going to follow. Make sure that you're all singing from the same sheet of music as far as what your plans are once you get to the other end, once you get down to the Anclote Key and Tarpon Springs area, how you're going to split up. Emphasize some of the points that we just talked about here this morning, about what speed you want to travel, what time you want to get to R4 down at Anclote Key, things like that.
Okay, let's take a quick break here, and we'll play a message from one of our sponsors. When we come back, we'll kind of shift a little bit and talk about some of the rules for safe mariners, if you will, that would really apply even more so to your Gulf crossing than perhaps some other parts of the loop. We'll be back in a moment.
Curtis Stokes & Associates is a yacht brokerage company that specializes in great loop capable boats. Curtis Stokes is a supporter of AGLCA at the Admiral level. If you're looking to buy or sell a great loop veteran from a trusted and knowledgeable broker, visit the company on the web at curtisstokes.net, email curtisstokes@curtisstokes.net, or call 954-684-0218.
We're back on Great Loop Radio talking today with Eddie Johnson, who puts out the daily Eddie's Weather Wag with some information on weather patterns and suitable times that you might want to consider doing your Gulf crossing. Eddie, the Gulf crossing is certainly something that we hear a lot of apprehension about amongst our membership. So one of the things that you presented at the rendezvous were some rules for safe mariners, and they apply just to general seamanship, but even more so to the Gulf crossing, particularly if you have some apprehension. So can you walk through a few of those rules for us?
You bet. Well, first of all, it's good to plan, even if you're doing the Big Bend route or whether you're going straight across the Gulf of Mexico, do some fuel planning. Make sure that you're going to arrive at your destination with at least 25% of your fuel capacity. For most of the trawlers, you know, run with diesel fuel, that's usually not a problem. Most people will tank up either at Apalachicola or Carrabelle and make that 20-hour or so crossing. So that's generally not a problem for most folks. But the gasoline people, make sure that you've done your computations and make sure that you've got a 25% fuel reserve, whether you're going straight across or whether you're going in the Big Bend route. Another thing to talk about is when you're out there on the Gulf, avoid the charted fish havens and the hazards that are on the charts, even those deep ones. Most chart plotters, they'll depict those. Just go around them. It may make you deviate a mile or so, but just stay away from them. Don't leave anything to chance. We talk about when you're doing your crossing, sometimes it gets kind of boring out there, you know, with endless water and nothing in sight. Always keep a watch, even when nothing seems to be around. Even at night, when you say you can't see anything, you know, there may be a northbound gold looper coming across there as you're heading southbound in the middle of the night. You want to look out for, you know, their lights. But during the daylight hours, there's still things out there besides perhaps crab plots. I've never heard of anybody really running into anything. I've never heard that discussion take place. But just a good crew will keep a watch, even when there doesn't seem to be something else around. Leave a sail plan or a float plan with somebody also. Before you leave Carrabelle or Apalachicola, leave a float plan with someone. You know, the particulars of your boat, what time you plan on departing the East Pass, what time you plan on getting to your destination. Leave that information with somebody. Let them know as much detail as possible, you know, the names that are on the boat, obviously the boat's name, telephone numbers, cell phone numbers, things like that. And for goodness sakes, make sure you leave that float plan with someone who is knowledgeable about boating. Don't call Aunt Susie back in Des Moines, Iowa, and tell her that you're leaving, you know, Dog Island at such and such a time or East Pass at such and such a time. Aunt Susie, when she doesn't hear from you, she's not going to know who to call. Generally, the people at the marinas that are sponsors of ours, like in Carrabelle, Sea Quarters, or the moorings, the staff there at both of those places, they deal with this all the time. Those would be very good people to give that float plan to. Another thing to kind of look out for, when you're looking at your weather, and all the captains should be looking at the weather before they take off from the coast, be aware of the phenomenon during this time of year, the trimester that we're traveling, for fog, okay? That's something that's hard to predict. It's harder to predict sometimes than others, but even meteorologists have a hard time with that. Be aware that that could be a factor in your crossing. Another thing that comes to mind also is if you go out on your deck at night, whether you're going to go up on the flybridge or down from the flybridge or check on something that's on your deck, make sure you wear a life vest, okay? People falling overboard at night, well, yeah, they're probably not going to be found. And if they don't have a life vest on, they certainly won't be found. But as we always like to emphasize also, don't get, you know, wrapped around the axle with that stuff, because we've never lost a looper yet.
And we don't intend to lose one this season either.
That's right. That's correct.
That's right. Any other things that perhaps we haven't covered? We are almost out of time already. It always seems to fly by when we try to cover this topic. Any other tips or anything we didn't cover that you think is most important to get across to everyone?
Well, I think just in general, make sure you've got some weather sources that you're comfortable with. If you're still upriver, or even along the coast, somewhere between Mobile and Caribel, start looking at the weather sources that you're going to use. There's lots of different computer-generated forecast models out there. I personally rely on Passage Weather is one website, SailFlow. Some people use Weather Underground. Some people use Cirrus. There's a whole host of sites out there. Just make sure that you're comfortable with the data that's in there. And just remember that all of that stuff comes basically from from NOAA. That's where all these various private organizations get their basic information from. But find one that you're comfortable with, find several that you're comfortable with. And between that and listening or reading Eddie's Weather Wag, we'll get you across the Gulf without any drama.
Perfect, Eddie. Thank you. And I just want to remind everybody to be patient waiting for that weather window. I think when people tend to get into trouble is when they start to get impatient and leave when perhaps they should wait for a more suitable window. Eddie, thank you for sharing all this information once again. I know you did this presentation twice for us in the last week. We certainly appreciate that, and thank you for coming on Great Loop Radio today and sharing information a little bit more widespread than just the people who were at the rendezvous.
That's my pleasure, Kim.
And I know you're headed for Point South as well, so safe travels for you and Linda. And to all of our listeners out there, thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another edition of Great Loop Radio. And until then, safe cruising.